The following program is produced and distributed by KETR.org. You can help by visiting KETR.org and clicking donate.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Facebook.com and Lions Roar, the weekly show about A&M Commerce Athletics. I'm Associate AD for Marketing Communications, Josh Mank. I'm here with new producer, Marcus Jensen. Say hi, Marcus.
Hi, everybody.
So he'll be your host next week as we've got a lot of stuff going on, and we'll talk to first to our head track and field coach, George Pincock. The Lions won the East Texas Invitational in a crazy weather day for sure. Definitely challenging meet on multiple fronts, not just performances, but operationally and having to switch things up. Talk about running a meet. What does that mean? Because we got to do it again for UIL in two weeks. What does running a meet mean for a coach and a meet director?
Late nights, lots of time. Late nights, lots of time, and just trying to really find a schedule that's conducive to good performance for all the athletes. So you just got to really look at things. You know, there'll be athletes that are doubling events. You know, sometimes you'll see people long jump 100 meter dash, or you know, sometimes a sprint event high jump. Some of those things you have to make sure that not everything is going on at once. You really want to give every athlete the opportunity to compete in as much as possible. So when you look at those things,
20 events on both the men's and women's side, so 40 events over the course of, I believe we started at 9 a.m. This time around. Our track set up a little bit differently with where the runways are for the pole vault and the long and triple jump. How hard is it as a coach to prepare for different meets based on different schedules? Because if we had Coach Brewster in here, they have batting practice at home, it's an hour before it. On the road, it's an hour and a half before. You have a set schedule every time. You know exactly what's going to happen. How different is it for track, since every track is set up just a little bit different?
Yeah, you really have to just look at the schedule. You know, our athletes know that roughly an hour and 20, an hour and 15 minutes out from the start of their event, they need to start moving around, making their bathroom breaks, getting that last little bit of food. So we know time frame out, but that time frame can be pretty different. You know, if we have a 9 o'clock start time for long jump, that means we're up probably by six, getting some food, and that's tough on an athlete because that's not really when they're used to doing it, and that's not always conducive to performance. So,
going to a meet like the Mount Sac Relays, which is well known in the track community, there's going to be some wild performances there. We've got people in different. Not just the open, but the invitational, which means you're at a meet big enough where you have open and invitational. When you have a big two-day meet like that, how much different is that for these student-athletes?
I think it's a lot more fun, honestly. They get the chance to do a little less each day. They get to enjoy kind of being a spectator of the sport, because I'd like to think each of them love what they do, and they like to watch it, not just do it. So, you know, some will race Friday, some will race just Saturday, some will race Friday and Saturday. But, you know, when it's 2 days like that, you get to split things up a little bit. There's not so much pressure of having to come back and compete a second or third event when you're already a little bit tired. Planning meals, that's probably one of the things I enjoy most about a two-day meet, is you're not trying to cram food in between a 400-meter dash at 4 o'clock in the afternoon and a 4x4 at 6:30. You know, you actually have time on a two-day meet to get food and make sure you feel good. So
let's talk a little bit more about the ET invite. It was, what, 60 degrees at the warmest and 20-mile-an-hour winds all day. It never really stopped, which was kind of crazy. And for late April or mid-April, granted it's Texas in spring, our weather's never the same twice, but usually this is a hot meet. Like, I remember last year, I was sweating like crazy.
Yeah, it was I didn't expect it. You know, I was hoping all week long that the weather would change. It would look like there was going to be some bad weather south of us, to the southeast. It was definitely going to be windy to the north of us. And we had a lot of interest in the meet because I think we sat right in a pocket where it looked like it was going to be okay. But the wind shifted. It came down out of the north. And although it felt like 60, it was 60.
Oh, it never felt like it.
It never felt like 60. And there might have been a few moments where the wind stopped blowing 5 or 10 minutes at a time.
Yeah.
Where it felt decent, but it never felt 60. The wind blew hard all day long. When the sun went down, Oh, it got even colder.
That was less than enjoyable for... So how much different is that, though, for an athlete who's moving around and getting the blood moving and everything? Like, track uniforms are not exactly warm, but your blood's moving. It's a little different than us in the scoring tent and the timing tent who are just sitting there all day. Yeah. Is it better, worse? Like, how hot, what's the ideal condition for, let's say, a quarter miler? What do you really want?
I want 85, no wind, sun shining. I want perfect for the quarter milers. This weekend was really good, you know, for the distance events. You know, mm-hmm. your 1500 guys, your 5K, your 3K steeplechase, your 10K guys. You know, that 40s, 50 is really what they want, but they don't want to have to run 25 laps into a 20 mile an hour headwind. That gets old, and that gets old quick. So, you know, temperature-wise, it was right for those guys, just the wind wasn't going to cooperate.
The 3K steeplechase, I know we had some people who were doing that for the first time. If I remember right, Laura, who wound up winning it, it was her first ever steeplechase. The water element of that is so wild compared to any other sport. It's just like, here, let's make you as uncomfortable as possible when it's, you know, 50 degrees. That's a crazy event to watch for people who haven't watched it before.
Yeah, it's fun, you know, and... If you've seen someone do it and do it really right, it's an amazing thing to watch how they move over those barriers, you know, the four on the track, just like a hurdler would in the 110 meter hurdles. And then that water jump, if you've seen someone, they approach it a little different, they put a foot on top, and if they move well over the top of the barrier, the elite are only getting maybe 1 foot ankle mid-calf wet, and the other foot's clearing the entire pit. So it's a lot of fun to watch.
For everybody, so people know there's a water jump and that it's an angle there. How deep is it at its deepest?
I believe it's just a meter.
So how high is the barrier, though?
For the women, it is 33 inches.
So you're looking at almost a six-foot drop from the top.
Sorry, 30 inches for the women. Yeah.
That's still almost a 6 foot drop from a meter to the extra 30 inches on top of that.
11 foot drop where your eyes are.
That's crazy. I was going to say, somebody didn't really clear. It might have been Laura or Maddie, and it was like not quite up to their waist, but it was definitely a shock to the system.
Yeah, you know, and you're landing on an inclined surface, so you have forward momentum, you land on an inclined surface, and if you're not moving in the right direction, it's a huge braking force, and it'll crumble you, and you'll take a dunk.
Yeah, and on the first lap, everybody's still a little bit together. I mean, 3,000 meters, that's 7.5 laps.
Mm-hmm.
And so that first lap, everybody's still together, so you're tightly packed jumping into a pool, basically.
And that's one of the hardest things about the steeplechase is if you're in a pack, you don't see the hurdle coming. Yeah. You're hurdling because you see other heads start to go up, and you hope your time is right if you're in that pack.
Man, I honestly think that might be one of the craziest events in all of sports. I mean, everything else. I can run faster than you, I can jump over this and you can't, I can throw this farther than you, you know, but you know, here, let's put a creek in the way, basically.
And you know, it's fun if the water jump, if you can save, you know, let's just say 2 seconds on every water jump over six laps,
that's a big difference.
Seconds, you know, and that's not crazy to think that you can save that time. Getting in the deep end and trotting out of there takes a lot of effort.
Yeah,
it really does. So.
Yeah, we were watching Evan Luke. He works in our office, and he was really excited to do the steeplechase this year. And he was watching blooper videos because that's what he does. But we saw one person jump on. They fell over it and they disappeared into that water. So you watch it on TV. You watch it at the Olympics. You see these people. It doesn't look very deep, but it actually, that person disappeared down into that puddle.
So. Especially when you're considering the height that you're coming from, the speed you're trying to maintain speed. That's a wild event.
Yeah. And the crashes are outrageous. Like, if you've ever seen anyone just...
Oh, Laura almost ate it.
Yeah.
Like, she really did. And she went in the race. But the second time through the water, like, she almost ate it.
Oh, and if you've ever seen one on the other side of the barrier where someone doesn't see the barrier coming up sneaks up on them a little bit faster, but...
Those don't move like a regular hurdle. Those are anchored.
Those are anchored. They are solid, heavy pieces of wood, and it'll bruise your thigh and flip you over right into that water.
Oh, man, that's crazy. So both teams still in the top 10 in the nation. The men move up to third. The women move down a little bit. That happens with the way the point system works and everything. A lot of good new marks on the women's side, especially Mina. I want to talk about that. The new school record in the pole vault in challenging conditions.
Yeah.
But and then she also got another PR in the 400 hurdles. She's gotten faster every week. Mm-hmm. And the 4x4 relay won again. Mm-hmm. And that's another great week for a freshman.
Yeah, you know, I think Mina might have been the only one that enjoyed the weather.
I mean, she is from Sweden.
From Sweden, she said, I'm so excited.
Like,
yeah, she said, I'm so excited I'm not sunburnt this week. You know, she warmed up for the hurdles. It was probably 8 or 8:15 at that point of the night, and she warmed up with her shoes off.
That's crazy.
Like, out on the turf, and like, she was like, yeah, this is a great day at home.
Wow. That's.
But yeah, you know, she pole vaulted really well. In some tough conditions. It was still fairly cold in the morning. I know a lot of the pole vaulters are having a hard time just gripping the pole because it was so cold. They just couldn't get a good feel for things. And then she ran really, really well in the hurdles, just kind of got out early, set up a solid race, and stayed on her rhythm. So training-wise, race-wise, she's ready for some big things, and it's just really going to make sure from this point on into conference, into nationals, that we rest her at the appropriate times, and really just give her the confidence to run faster, because she's going to do it.
Looking at the national rankings and the way everything's broken down, and you and I both have different little segments we like to look at. There's so many different ways you can calculate all this and what's important and what isn't and what helps you win a meet and that kind of thing. And the one you bring up, the event group rankings, describe kind of what that is, because you and I are looking at it. We're about to tell people where we're ranked in some of these, and it's going to blow their mind a little bit. But say, like, what are we looking at here?
So, you know, each week they do national rankings, and they rank the team based on the national descending order list of, you know, marks, fastest mark, farthest mark, that's one, and they just move their way down. But for the event group rankings, any team that has four people that have competed in an event, they'll combine all of those marks, add them up to a total time or to a total distance, and then they rank teams based on those. So we're very fortunate that we have several teams that we've been able to compete at least four in that have an event ranking.
Okay, so we'll go over the women first, because, I mean, they're still on the rise. I mean, it's hard to say, oh, yeah, they're not the best of the two teams. They're ranked ninth in the country. Like,
yeah.
The marks are still incredible. Top event group in the nation in the high jump, third in the 100-meter hurdles and the heptathlon, and eighth in the long jump, 10th in the 400-meter hurdles. What kind of that depth, what does that mean for, let's say, a conference meet especially?
Yeah. Like you said, that team's on the rise. They're growing. A lot of those marks that are in there are from young girls, from freshmen, sophomores, a handful of juniors. So when we get to the conference level, I think we're going to continue just to close that gap and really move in and hopefully sneak a spot or two away from two of the best teams in the nation in Angelo State and West Texas A&M. And if we sneak one, that's fantastic. If we sneak two of those spots and win a championship, you never know what happens. Like, we just got to go in there and fight for it. And you know, you set yourself up well and show up on the day of.
Looking at the event group rankings for the men, and this is what's going to blow some people's mind if they're watching right now. Let's go 800 meters and javelin, ranked 26 in the country. That's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Not bad. Fourth in the country in the pole vault. Pretty good. Number one event group in the country in the 100 meters, the 200 meters, the 400 meters, and the long jump. And so we haven't done four in the triple jump, I guess, because otherwise we'd probably be number one there.
We might. There's some good triple jumps out there, teams.
Yeah, but I mean, and with the provisional marks, that, like, Florian Obst, not really a long jumper, 12th best in the country this week. Sir Morgan Loud, freshman, 15th longest in the nation this week. I mean, just all sorts of crazy marks getting thrown up by the men's team.
Yeah. You know, the men's team's really, really talented, you know, especially those short groups, the short sprint groups, the long sprint group, really talented. There's some depth there. And the jump groups led by some great seniors. Devontae Steele's a great leader in that group, a quiet guy, but he gets them to work and they all do what they're supposed to do. Florian's in that long jump group every once in a while when he's not doing another event. A great leader. On the women's side, you have Jasmine Roberts, senior, one of the first girls on the podium at last year's Outdoor National Championship.
Mm-hmm.
Good leader. You have Cameron McKee, who doesn't long jump every single week and doesn't practice long jump every single week.
And then still throws up a PR and a provisional.
Yeah. And so you have just a really good group of people who like to come out and be competitive. And I think that's kind of the heart of our sport. You have to want to be competitive.
Looking ahead to the Mount SAC this week, Friday, Austin Yeager in the 1500, the 4x1 relay for the men's side, 400-meter dash open for Cameron McKee, Rose Simpson, who we had on last week, Gabriel Peterson and Deidre Windham on the men's side, women's 800, Maya Collins, 400 hurdles, Mina, and the 200, that one's going to be fun with Jude, DeLance, and Malcolm. That's some pretty quick guys right there.
Yeah, you know, I think we're at the point in our season now where we've kind of backed off some of the heavy training. We're trying to let the legs feel good and really just get out there and race. And then this is where you want to do it. The weather looks great down there. The competition
Southern California, when do they ever have bad weather, right?
I know.
And then Saturday evening, and this is what I'm looking forward to, and describe to people the difference between an open race in a meet like this and these four entries we're about to talk about in invitational events. Mm-hmm. What's the big difference there?
A meet like Mount SAC, you know, they're going to limit their field size to, you know, 30 teams. They're going to let 30 teams in, and then they're going to look at those entries and say, well, here are the top six. These are kind of the elite. We're going to move these to a special section on Saturday evening.
Prime time,
in front of the crowd, in front of all the high school kids that will also be competing there, and kind of put the spotlight on them.
So our spotlight athletes in the Invitationals in the 400 at 4 o'clock Central Time, 2 o'clock over there in California. And I think this one's going to be super special based on where this guy's from, is Rashard Clark. I think this is going to be a special 2 o'clock race on Saturday for him.
Yeah, he hasn't stopped talking for 2 weeks about how he can't wait to go home. He's excited to see his family. He's excited to go to In-N-Out Burger.
He knows those in Dallas, right?
He wants to go to Roscoe's. You know, he's just ecstatic about everything about the trip. So
Rashard getting to run in front of the home crowd. Triple jump Devontae Steele in the Invitational. And there, I saw the entry list on that. And normally you see name school. Mm-hmm. Name school. Now you're seeing name sponsored brand. Name USA and Devontae Steele, A&M Commerce. That's going to be pretty special for him.
Yeah. I don't quote me on this, but I think there's only one, maybe two other guys that are representing a university.
I think it's him and Michael Sandel.
Michael Sandel, who is champion in 2017 outdoors and indoors. So don't quote me on that, but it should be a really good field, you know, a chance for him to compete against some of the best in the nation, best in the world, honestly.
Yeah, we have the internet. We can find this. Yeah, we've got three unattached, Michael Sandel from Mankato, Devontae, and then here we go, Nigeria, Mexico, unattached, Latvia, Adidas, Nike.
Mm-hmm.
Usually when you're sponsored by a brand that you've heard of like that, you're probably pretty good.
Yeah, you know, and that's, I think, part of the reason why we want to get out and get to some of these different meets, you know, especially some of these big meets in L.A. or Texas Relays, that there are those coaches there that work with those teams, and we want our athletes to be seen by those because, you know, I think we have athletes that can go on and can compete at the next level.
That brings me, you give us a little update. Oh, there was a guy who won the 1500 or the 5K in the morning. Skinny guy from El Paso that some of us may have heard of, Ricky Romero. How's he doing? What have you heard back from him?
Yeah, you know, he came up last week, was able to run a good race. I think he used it more or less kind of as training just because of the weather conditions. But, you know, he's doing really well. I believe he has a small little sponsorship in you know, as we say in our world, he's chasing the dream.
Mm-hmm.
And the big dream is only one race away, always. So he's enjoying it. He's loving it. He's in a good, really good training group. Last time I spoke with him, and I don't know if this has changed since then, but this was as of a few months ago. He's training with Leo Manzano, a UT graduate, silver medalist at the Olympics.
Wow.
So he's got a great little training group, and I think he's happy. And that's the most important thing.
Awesome. And then we'll close out the weekend at 7 o'clock or 7:10 and 7:15 here, Central Time Zone. So 5:10 and 5:15 in LA. Invitational group for both women's and men's 4x4 relays. You and I were joking during the meet on Saturday. I was joking about calling this quarter mile U, and you were like, how about just fast U? And I'm totally on board with that. But there's something special about our mile relay right now, just the how good the time that got put up by both the women and men fairly early in the season, and not, as you say, not necessarily even performing at their best. Yeah. I mean, how do these relays feel going into this meet?
I think we're just excited. You know, I think I have a group of guys that's really good. You know, not just four guys. I have a little bit of depth there, but I think those guys are very confident of their ability, and very confident that they can go out any week and run a really good time. But they're also aware that that takes a little bit out on the body. So they kind of look forward to these bigger meets where they can kind of get in and say, this one matters. This one's kind of a little bit bigger of a stage. Mm-hmm. So there's a little bit of excitement around this week for sure. And then on the women's side, this is still new to the women. They're still kind of adjusting to the success they've had early in the season. But, you know, I'm really confident they'll get out there and they'll run. You know, Cameron's a really, really good veteran.
Cameron McKee, Renisha Simpson, who we had on last week, a sophomore. Joy's a sophomore,
junior.
And Mina's a freshman. So you've got a little bit of everything on that team.
So, and you know, Cam's been to a national championship as a freshman in the Open 400. She's been as part of the relay a few years. And so she knows what some of those big meets feel like. Whereas for the rest of that group, that indoor championship was the first one for all of them.
Yeah. At that meet, I would say probably 2,000 to 3,000 people in there. Yeah. But it's an indoor track. There's only so much room there is to put people. This is the Mount Sac Relays. Like, people know everybody's going to be there.
And those girls will come out and they'll run. They know what to do. And I think Cam kind of keeps them on track. You know, some of the girls are still, like I said, young and get a little nervous. There's a lot of people here, all of those things. But at the end of the day, it's 400 meters. Mm-hmm. And you want to run it as fast as you can.
And get the stick to the next person and get across.
That's always important.
Yeah, getting the stick to the next person. We saw that in a relays here the other day. Getting the stick across the line is very important.
Yeah, it's all part of the sport.
Yeah. So, all right, well, best of luck. Enjoy waking up early. And you were telling me there's a food thing that you wanted that y'all were talking about there. We always like to talk about food on this show. What was the name of the thing?
They're called Able Skeevers.
Able Skeevers.
Yes.
What is an Able Skeever?
So my mom grew up in a little town called Salving. It's the Danish capital of the United States. And it looks exactly like Denmark. I went to Denmark last summer on vacation. It looked exactly like it. And so Able Skeevers are basically, I would describe them as little pancake balls. And you put, people put all different kinds of things. You can stuff them with fruit.
Jams.
My family, we just eat them syrup and powdered sugar. We eat them for Christmas. That's our special Christmas thing.
Able Skeevers.
Yeah.
They're good.
Is this something like we could pull off here?
I can't make them.
I know, but like, could we figure it out? Do you think we could get people to figure out? Like, this sounds delicious.
Yeah, it can be figured out. My family has two. We have cast iron pans. They're cast iron.
Okay,
pans,
so it's like a little.
Yeah, no, it's just half, and it's like a half circle, and then you turn them. You turn them every couple minutes until they're done.
I was hoping we got that a little more on camera than we did. I had to look up there, but anytime we have hand motions on a radio show, it's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
So, all right, well, enjoy your Able Skeevers, Roscoe's, Richard's In-N-Out, even though we can get that here now.
It's not the same.
Whataburger for life. Anyway, so I still like In-N-Out, too. I'm not going to hate. So, well, best of luck at Mount Sac. We'll talk more about that next week, and then conferences right around the corner. It's hard to believe.
Coming fast.
All right, well, we'll be right back with our head golf coach, Ron McCosco, here on Lions Roar.
Hello, this is Alex Shiloh from the Lions football team. The Lions Champion Fund is the official support unit for Lion Athletics.
Donations to the LCF go directly to providing a best-in-class experience for all 436 Lions student-athletes. I am Sydney Reyes from the Lion volleyball team.
For more information about the LCF, you can visit lionchampionsfund.com.
Again, that's lionchampionsfund.com, and thank you for your best-in-class support.
Back here on Lions Roar, the weekly show about A&M Commerce Athletics. I'm Associate AD for Marketing and Communications, Josh Mank, and here on my left, I'm joined again for the second time in a semester, a new record for our head women's and men's golf coach, Ron McCosco. Since we were in here last time, two tournament wins for the women and the men, only the second ever tournament win for the women, which is pretty awesome. And then the men closing out with their third win of the season. Let's talk about the women's team first. Mm-hmm. Good win. Talk about that tournament. What was different? Because those scores were not I mean, those are the best scores we had, but mm-hmm. it seemed like everybody else was shooting normal. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't like everybody was shooting crazy low. It's just right. we finally hit our stride, it seemed like.
Well, you got to keep in mind that we've got a very young team this semester. And as you look at our top five, the top five that week, the top five that's going to be going to conference, we're looking at three freshmen and a sophomore and a junior. So we like the kid internally, the coaches. It's kind of Lauren and the baby, the little baby lions.
Yeah, it's what, so the Cubs.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes, and so but they did a great job. Weather was not kind at all. Again, it's been a really really rough semester. I think that's one of the things when it's really hard to compare scores from around the mm-hmm. region, around the country, because we really have not had any break in the weather at all in any of our tournaments. A lot of other places, other schools have gone to Arizona, gone to California, and they've had some nicer weather and been able to take advantage of it. We just haven't had that situation. And sure enough, on Sunday, we just got blasted with some more bad weather in the practice round. The ladies, you know, battled through it. And then come Monday and Tuesday, a lot of wind, really cold early morning temperatures mm-hmm. like we've been getting all semester long. And they just gutted it out and did a great job. Paige Lee Garris, a freshman from Florida, now from Dallas. Her parents just moved.
Awesome. Good. I like that. We need to check that on the bio.
So she did a great job leading us that week. Really has been solid all semester. She's been our top scorer this semester. Did a great job in the tournament and finished in the top five in the event. And so she kind of led us. But we were really solid 1 through 5. I mean, Lexi Bubenchik, who's from Ohio, she struggled in the first round, but she came back in the second round. And, you know, she really got off to a bad start in the first nine. She was really struggling with her driver and was having a hard time putting it in play. And there's some places there you just can't miss it. And but she did a great job on the back nine. I told her on Tuesday, after her Tuesday round when she shot 76, I said, you know, realistically, you know, where you really shined was that second round on back nine on Monday. The fact that she could bring it back from a really rough first nine and come back with a 39 on the back nine
wow.
was really terrific. And I think it set the stage for her to have that confidence to be able to play really well and shoot that 76 on the second day.
I shot a 76 yesterday, but it was also a 9-hole course. And
mini golf.
Yeah, no, I was also counting double par on those holes and still shot 76. It was pretty bad. So sounds like confidence with that women's group ranked in the nation right now. Looking at 53rd, that's not bad at all, especially considering where we've been in the past. That will put us, let me look, conference wise probably about the fourth seed in the conference going in. That's a pretty good spot for a 9-team league.
Yeah. I mean, we're, when you have three teams in the top, I think it's 18 in the country. I mean, we definitely have a lot at the top that we have to get through. Mm-hmm. I think our goal is, you know, it would be really nice if there was a way that we could beat one of those three or more next week at the conference championships. I mean, big thing about it is that we just want to focus on playing our way. Mm-hmm. I think that's what we've tried to do this semester in particular, is really, you know, the thing about that's nice about golf is you don't have to worry about reacting to your opponent. Mm-hmm. So in our situation, it's never going to be about what's the other, you know, the other team going to do and what are we going to do to counteract that. We really want to focus on how do we play, how do we want to manage ourselves, how are we going to handle adversity, which, well, again, we've pretty much faced that every single tournament. Mm-hmm. And just keep getting better. And the fact that we've got such a young group, and I think they're coming together as a group. I mean, really, I mean, we say five, you know, that traveled, but really, we're kind of in a mode where we have six. Mm-hmm. Any one of those six could end up in the top five, and that adds another freshman, because mm-hmm. now we're talking four freshmen and a sophomore and a junior.
And then, so all the teams will be put in groups of three.
Right.
How you think you can envision, or how much of a goal is it to be in that final group on the second day of the tournament at this point in this team? I know that's different when mm-hmm. we switch to the guy's side here in a second.
Right. Well, I mean, whatever happens, happens. I mean, mm-hmm. the bottom line is those things are out of our control. And mm-hmm. if you go out in Tarleton and West Texas A&M and Midwestern all play really good golf and we're not able to manage that, that doesn't mean that we haven't had a good tournament. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the fact that those three are going to be focused on beating each other, that's where I think it gives us an opportunity. Sometimes, you know, you get in those, you know, threesome with those three together that first day, and somebody struggles, and people get a little bit frustrated, and sometimes the scores kind of get away from you a little bit. Our hope is that we can take care of our own business and maybe sneak up on somebody or more. And I know that's what happened last year, and that's our hope, is that we can kind of keep doing that. And using it, really, coming off that tournament at Henderson State, using this, again, as a springboard towards next year. That's the big thing, is we want to make sure that we're doing things in a way that leads us into a very successful off season during the summer, individual play, amateur play, and then come back in the fall with a couple more recruits that we'll add, being able to build on that and to have a better sense for how we're going to do things as opposed to the learning that's been going on pretty much all year long.
With this group, and we've said it many times now, it's a very young group. You're a first year coaching here, first year with this group, first year with this dynamic, first year at this school, first year with the other dynamic with the men's team and all these different things. Without it being a season wrap-up, because the season's not over, mm-hmm. but going into this very important conference tournament, looking back on what you were thinking in August, how do you feel about this women's season and where they're at going into conference?
Well, I mean, nothing ever goes according to plan, let's put it that way.
I mean, if everything went according to plan, our jobs would be a lot different.
Well, I mean, the whole thing with this semester is we really wanted a chance to see what this group of ladies would be able to do. See how much growth we would, how much progress we'd make, how much growth, how much, how we would handle the adversity. We never anticipated the weather to be the way it was.
And yeah, I don't think you could.
Right. And so that's been, that's been a major challenge. And I really feel for them because they've really had to gut out some really miserable situations. But, looking at it right now, going into the conference, coming off the win at Henderson State, I think we're really pleased with the growth and the progress we're making. I think we still have some work to do, but I think everyone's really energized by the fact that we did have that success, and they're looking forward to, what's coming up. And like I said, I think everything's really positive going into, what we hope is going to be a very busy offseason.
Looking at the men's side now, a little bit different, more experienced team, more experienced in all aspects, mm-hmm. A very highly touted team coming in compared to the rest of the conference, for sure. And then a couple tournaments there where not bad, but not what we wanted. And then we go to the last tournament and win the thing. Mm-hmm. And the scores were back to where they were at the beginning of the year when everything was probably the highest this program's ever been in terms of rankings, low scores, just momentum, that kind of thing. So talk about the momentum that the guys are on right now going into the conference tournament.
Well, I think it starts with the three guys at the top. I mean, we are very, very blessed to have three guys ranked in the top. I think it's 75 or so in the nation.
Yeah, I'll check on that. Keep talking.
Yeah, we've those guys have done it all year long. They've just been our horses. When you look at Lucas, did a great job in the fall. Will has really, really come on. He's a senior, but he's really come on the last couple tournaments. Back-to-back top two finishes, and has really done, I think has really bought in and seen the results. And that's always exciting for us as coaches because we do ask for them to be a little bit open-minded on how they approach things. But to have Will, have this success has been great. I think he's probably the worst ranked of the three, and I want to say he's in that 75 to 80 range.
We'll go Lucas McCubbin at 55, Blake Hartford at 75, and Wilfredo Sanchez at 83.
Okay.
Yeah, it's so, still, I mean, that you think about it, that's five guys on every team, however many 200-plus schools in the country. You just look at that, and that's
1,000.
Yeah, that's immediately 1,000 people there. So there's three guys on easy bad math mm-hmm. that are in the top 10% of the country.
And I'm pretty sure they're the only three players in our conference that are ranked, if I'm not mistaken.
Keep talking. Looking.
Like I said, we're very fortunate that those three have just been able to do it all year long, and they've kind of ham and egged it a little bit. This past tournament, everyone seems to pitch in for the other, and that's kind of our team concept that we're looking for, is that, with five guys, and I think really when we look at this past tournament, this was the first time we had this collection of five guys together, and I really felt very comfortable that this was the best group that we have in our team right now. So the fact that all five of them got a chance to play together, they all had a chance to have some success. For both Garrett and Joe, they haven't had a chance to play as much. Mm-hmm. So they got a chance to kind of knock some of the rust off, but they also shined. And particularly in Garrett, I got to give Garrett a lot of credit. He's a tough son of a gun because he's going through a bit of a swing change. Mm-hmm. And to go out there on a tough course, Hardscrabble is the best course that we've played. As a matter of fact, I'd put those final five holes at Hardscrabble up against most any course in the country. It's really mm-hmm. one of the best designs that I've seen in a long, long time. And
I'll give it this, a good name as well. That's a really good name for a golf course, Hardscrabble.
Yeah. But, it's got some tight holes on it. And to go out there with working on a swing change and to gut out a 72-71 the last two rounds in particular was really outstanding and really helped us tremendously. We went up against an Arkansas Fort Smith team, I believe is ranked fifth in the region, and on their home course where, it's one of those courses where you have a very, very distinct advantage knowing that course. Mm-hmm. And I think that their coach would tell you that they played quite well. I know he gave us a lot of compliments on how we played, and I think, you know, there was a little bit of surprise that we were able to hang with them. And if you look at the rest of the field, we had some of our LSC folks in there. Nobody else was even close. It was really so the two of us, and then
A&M Commerce at 6 over, Fort Smith at 9 over, and the next closest was Midwestern at 31 over. Right. I mean, that's a 22 stroke difference between second and third.
Right. Yeah, and I really think it was just, I mean, our two teams were able to separate, and I think both teams played really good golf at the right time of the year, and we were very fortunate to win. But again, you know, I think it was a true team effort where the guys all stepped up. I mean, Joe contributed two really good rounds as well, and I know he's going to play a lot better as he goes along, and that's really exciting for us that these things are happening at this time of the year.
Same thing we talked about with the women going into this conference tournament. Only six teams on the men's side versus nine on the women's side, so a little more room for surprise, a little more room mm-hmm. for somebody to pull away as well, and 54 holes over the course of 2 days instead of 36. How much of a challenge is it sometimes, or an advantage, to play that 36 holes in the first day? Because if you start off poorly, you have that much longer in your head that you've got to pull it out and get it right. But also at the same time, if you get on a roll, you can really get some hot things going on that first day.
Right, right. And I think if you look at our situation all year long, we've really excelled on Monday. We've done a great job. And Monday, you know, I think there's a little bit of nerves in that first round on Monday when you come out, and we shot good scores on that. We played exceptionally well this last tournament on Monday morning. But traditionally, Monday morning is kind of our feeling out round, and mm-hmm. then Monday afternoon is when we've really attacked the golf course. I think we've kind of worked our way through things in terms of how we want to set up holes, which ones are holes that we want to be aggressive on, which ones do we want to maybe be a little bit more conservative. And I think by Monday afternoon, we do a really good job of really playing the golf course the best that we can. We did a good job this time. What I was really happy about with this last tournament at Arkansas Fort Smith was that it was that Tuesday round. Mm-hmm. We have not been as strong on Tuesday until this past tournament, and I think that was really important for us to be able to apply the same concepts and same methodology we used on Monday to coming out on Tuesday and just competing against the golf course and not playing to with a purpose, so to speak. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I think the hardest thing for young players to understand, at least what we try to teach, is that we never change how we approach the game, how we approach a golf course, whether we're ahead, whether we're behind. You know, if we're ahead by a couple strokes, we're behind by a couple strokes, we don't change. We want to play the best that we can possibly play on that given round, on that given hole, that on that given shot, and then just get better at that and better at that and better at that as we go through each tournament and through the course of the year.
Men's team at third in the region behind Colorado Springs and St. Mary's. Oklahoma Christian fourth, Fort Smith, who we just talked about, in fifth. Three schools from Colorado, then St. Edwards and Western New Mexico is the other LSC team in the top 10. 10 teams will go to regionals in a couple weeks. Lions in pretty good position. There's no automatic qualifier on the men's side, so In a way, that's almost a benefit because you don't have a fallback. You have to play well for the entire year to make it.
Right, right, exactly. And, you know, I mean, for us, it's all about trying to peak at the right time. And I hope, and I guess we'll find out more here in the next 4 or 5 days, but I hope we are peaking at the right time.
Well, awesome. I'll be out there in Abilene with you, helping run the tournament. Hopefully, just getting to watch golf after what I did yesterday, I don't need to pick up. The clubs are in my car, and they might just stay there for a while. Or I need to work really hard. It's one of the two. My game is not very good. I'm on a golf course for other reasons than getting the ball in the hole. We'll put it that way. So we'll have plenty of that on Lion Athletics on Monday and Tuesday. And then Marcus will be here in the studio on Wednesday as I'll be out at meetings. So you looking forward to that?
Definitely looking forward to it. It'll be a good week.
All right. That's a good answer. I like that answer. Good enthusiasm. So make sure to keep up with everything here on our social media channels as well as lionathletics.com. For head coach of track and field, George Pinkock, and head golf coach, Ron McCosco, I'm Josh Mank. We'll see you next week on Lion Shore.